As I mentioned last time, I was inspired by having just a few days before we met, or actually it was one day before we met, having completed a retreat, teaching a retreat, co-teaching retreat on the Brahma Vihara, on the four qualities of the awakened heart. Loving kindness, compassion, appreciative or sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And last time I spoke about mudita, and we practiced mudita. And today I want to follow up with that, as Bill was suggesting, and cover the fourth of the Brahma Vihara. Equanimity. And as with last time, I want to shift the order some from the way we usually practice, which is to give the talk first, which is really orienting us for our practice. Typically, when I just do basic mindfulness practice, we do the practice first and the talk second. But today, like last week, the talk will orient us for the practice, which will be doing equanimity practice in two main forms, both as a mindfulness and wisdom practice and as a heart practice, awakened heart practice. So we'll go straight, it's my intention, from now till we go to the ending ritual practices we do with metta and so forth. And so I'll give a talk first, then we'll practice together, and then we'll have some discussion. Okay, so that's the sequence I'm intending. So how many people did actually practice with the mudita in the last week? And yeah, I look forward in the discussion to hearing how that was for people. They're really wonderful practices. I still, when I take walks, I think I mentioned last time, I do mudita practice with all beings and do mudita for plants and trees and flowers and people and even automobiles. May you continue to run well, and so forth. So it's, the Brahma Vihara practices are wonderful because they can really be brought into daily life, I think quite well, and often in an inspired way. So, equanimity, kind of an unusual English word that we don't use too much in ordinary English, but it's the word that's the translation of upekkha. Which typically is a word in the original context, which means balance. And equanimity is this capacity to be balanced. And the practice occurs in two main contexts. One is in the context, as I mentioned, of mindfulness and wisdom, that we develop more equanimity with what comes up. And the second context is that of equanimity as a way of relating to others. It's an equanimity which is filled really with care, but has a kind of balance in terms of what occurs to others, and including people close to us. So those are the two contexts that I'd like to explore. Equanimity is seen by the Buddha as a very, very developed and really advanced quality. This is from the Buddha, really talking and referring to equanimity. As a solid mass of rock is not stirred by the wind, So a sage is not moved by praise and blame, as a deep lake is clear and undisturbed. And I think a lot about how equanimity appears in some of the most beloved people that we probably know and that we know historically. I think a lot about Dr. Martin Luther King, and people probably have seen his talk, which he gave in Memphis the day before he was assassinated. How many people can recall that speech? The speech where he says, "I don't know what will happen now, but it doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop." Do you remember that? "I've been to the mountaintop, and I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountaintop, and I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. And I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any person." That was the night before he was killed. And I think about a Tibetan teacher who's been important for me, Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. Some of you may know of his life. There's a beautiful movie which is available on YouTube called Brilliant Moon, which you can see right on YouTube. And he's been very inspiring for me. The person who was my main mentor, John Travis, many of you know, met Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche many times. He died in 1991. I never met him, but I've actually had dreams about him, and a number of dreams, almost like teaching dreams, where he's appeared in my dreams and given me guidance, which is very, very beautiful. And there's a time when he was saying, and he was needing to leave Tibet in whatever, 1958 or 59, go. He ended up in Bhutan and, lost most of his library of books, was in exile. And he said his intention is to keep an inner freedom no matter what happens. That's the quality of equanimity. So again, the term is upekkha. And again, I'll talk about upekkha and equanimity first in the context of insight practice, mindfulness, and wisdom, and then in the context of heart practice. And both are really, really crucial. So upekkha often means, typically means balance. It's about being balanced with what comes up. It doesn't mean being calm necessarily. There can be a lot of things happening, but we can, as it were, really, I was thinking, go with the flow. Not be caught, no matter what's happening, even if it's a lot is happening, we're running all over the place, can we stay balanced? Really crucial point, not the same as calm. I learned this, I remember I learned something really important about this once when I was doing a retreat at IMS in Massachusetts. And after the retreat, I said, I'll work in the kitchen for a week. And I did, and it was often really, really busy and hectic, but partly as a fruit of I think I had done several weeks of practice. I could notice, I think I remember it most when we were serving tacos one day and just condiments everywhere, running all around. And there was a kind of balance, even though things were moving really, really quickly. So equanimity doesn't require calm. There can be all sorts of things happening, but there's some degree of balance. There's a beautiful essay I think I mentioned last time, and I quoted from it, I think, from Nyanaponika Thera, the German-born monk who was in Sri Lanka. And he wrote a beautiful essay on the Brahmavihara called The Four Sublime States, which you can find on the web, especially on the website Access to Insight. And he has beautiful analyses, probably clearer than anyone else I know, about how the four Brahmavihara interrelate and that we really need all of them to be integrated to have maturity for any given one. So equanimity has to have elements of loving kindness and compassion and joy, or it's going to be distorted. And so Nyanaponika Thera said, equanimity is perfect, unshakable balance of mind and heart and body, rooted in insight. Again, it's taken to be one of the most advanced qualities as a wisdom quality. It's the, in so many of the lists, it's the last one named in the seven factors of awakening. It's the last. In the Brahmavihara, it's the last. In the paramis or qualities, sometimes translated to perfections, it's the last one. So it's the ability to be with what's coming up and hold it without reactivity. And my experience with developing equanimity is that equanimity is learned by seeing all the times that we don't have equanimity. Interesting, right? And, seeing where we get caught in fear or anger or compulsive mind or whatever, and really learning from it. I had an experience just yesterday that was of this nature. Here I am preparing a talk on equanimity for today. And yesterday, for a relatively short period of time, I lost my equanimity, which is normally there almost always. No, just joking. I lost my equanimity. Here's the story. I was going out to have acupuncture. Some of you may know I go all the way out to Walnut Creek from Berkeley. So it's about a half an hour drive. And on my way back, I was coming back and I had a pretty tight schedule lined up. I had to pretty soon after I got back, have lunch, go into 2 hours of teaching, then do some further teaching. So it was a very, a lineup of things, and the timing had to work well. And so on my way back on Route 24 from Walnut Creek to Berkeley, all of a sudden, there was a parking lot of cars, right? And all of a sudden, the traffic came to an abrupt halt. I was a little bit higher. I could see looking down that it was a parking lot for the next half mile as far as I could see. And it was moving zero for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, moving zero. And I thought of the possibility that I would be in that parking lot of cars on Route 24, maybe for 2 hours, and my schedule wouldn't happen. At that point, I lost my equanimity. And I started saying, this is not working. This is not working. And it was not matter of fact. I was not in an equanimous place. So I think teachers often it's helpful to have true confessions, maybe at least once during a talk. This is a true confession. Donald loses equanimity. After a little while, maybe after 10 or 15 minutes, 15 minutes or so, the traffic started moving a little, but it actually was a crash up ahead, and I was delayed by half an hour, but things more or less worked out. But it was very revealing to me because I think of myself as having developed equanimity a lot. It's almost my favorite quality. But there I was. Equanimity was not there. And I was kind of in almost like in a, things have to go out like I planned. Anyone ever had that happen to you? Okay. Yeah. So it's familiar, but on the other hand, I mean, it probably would have happened even if I wasn't planning a talk on equanimity, but I said to myself, there's something important that you learned. Your equanimity can deepen further. How to take that as a learning experience, right? How to take that as a learning experience. And so what I want to do is just, more radically deepen in equanimity for me. What will help a lot is just remembering equanimity and having the intention, maybe for the next 2 or 3 weeks, have that intention twice a day to remember intention to have equanimity no matter what happens. So that was interesting, right? And just one more thing about background, then I'll talk some about some of the qualities of equanimity. One of the reasons that equanimity has been important for me is that I think my father, Simon, I don't know if people here knew, many of you knew my mom, but does anyone meet my father, Simon? Yeah, he died, I think, 2005. So I think it was before I was regularly teaching at Marin Sangha. So he had, in my mind, a tremendous amount of equanimity. He had enlisted in the armed services when he was 18, right before World War II. And so he actually served in World War II. And he had friends who died. In fact, I've been told that I was named after one of his friends who died, who was named Donald. So that happened after he went to college, after the service. He wanted to go to medical school, but he was not allowed to go to medical school because he was of Jewish ancestry. And at that time, in the late 1940s, they had quotas at medical schools. Probably some of you knew this, but it's not so widely known. Earlier, he had actually wanted to go to West Point, but he couldn't go to West Point because also because of being Jewish. They wouldn't allow that. So these things happened. He became, nonetheless, he went and got a, he became a scientist. And some of his early research probably led to him becoming blind through inadequately administered chemicals in the laboratory where he was. And so he became blind when he was still in his 40s. The reason I'm bringing these up that I think I experienced him not complaining about any of this and being really equanimous. When he was just a little bit older, in his 50s, he was diagnosed with cancer and told that he had 2 years to live. He actually lived for 27 more years. But it was always a threat, and eventually he died of the cancer that was formed by the chemotherapy. I think the reason I'm bringing all this up is that I felt him to be non-complaining and having a lot of equanimity with all of this, a certain amount of balance. And if these things were just happening, he could deal with them. So I think of my father when I give this talk. So thank you, Simon. And any of you who've been to Spirit Rock, there's a bench for my father in the courtyard at Spirit Rock. Anyone seen that? Probably some of you have. Anyway, so a little bit more about equanimity as a wisdom practice. It is first and foremost about balance. It's about non-reactivity, being able to be with what comes up. Again, the learning occurs by having lost equanimity, but then taking it as a learning experience, like having had fear and being caught in fear and being in reactivity with fear or anger or sadness or being judgmental or whatever, or difficult bodily experiences. So we learn by that. We're stretched beyond our capacities, but we take it as a learning possibility. We take it as a practice possibility, and we learn how to be balanced, be more balanced by really studying the nature of when we get into imbalance. Another way of saying that is we study reactivity. We remember the teaching of the two arrows. And we learn how to be with the first arrow, which is what is difficult or painful, without shooting the second arrow of reactivity. That's how equanimity develops by that practice. Another quality of equanimity is that it can really be even with whatever comes up. This happens, that happens. I'm caught in traffic. Okay, I can be with it, or can really see that with my father. Oh, and we learn this on retreats. We learn this in our meditation. We see, and again, we primarily learn by seeing where we're not equanimous and learning from it. Oh, back pain. Oh, difficult thought. And we get familiar enough with them and can be with them so that when they come up, it's just another thing. A haiku that for me expresses this quality of evenness, just being with what's there with equanimity. See if this sounds like an equanimity haiku. This is from the 17th century from Basho. Fleas, lice, the horse pissing near my pillow. Is that an equanimity haiku? I think so. He's not complaining about the horse. He's not saying, ah, why did that horse? Rah. It's just fleas, lice, the horse pissing near my pillow. There you go. A third quality of equanimity is unshakability. It's like we increasingly are not shaken by anything. And again, we keep learning from times when we are shaken. And one of the frameworks that helps us to practice with this just in our daily practice is a model many of you know called the Eight Worldly Winds, where we learn how to be with that which can shake us up. Pleasure and pain, gain and loss, fame and disrepute, or good reputation, bad reputation, and praise and blame. And those are great because they identify eight ways that we get a little bit stuck, that we lose equanimity, and we can work with those. And just see which of those have most power for us. A fourth quality of equanimity is understanding and wisdom, that we can be with the situation and see it with wisdom, where maybe previously we got knocked out of shape. And I was thinking about an experience that I had when I was teaching in a graduate school, which I did for a number of years. And I had an administrator, a senior administrator, who was almost like my nemesis. I would have a good idea and he would nix it. Does anyone have something like that at your workplace? A nemesis. Anyway, and one morning, this has happened many times, I had a discussion with him. I had a good idea. He said no. I started to go into reactivity, but then something in my mind said, just okay, he has his nature. I have my nature. We have our background. Here's the institutional background. And this just keeps happening. And I had a certain level of equanimity based on understanding causes and conditions. As I'll come back in a moment and say, I still could act as skillfully as I could, but that time was kind of a breakthrough. I didn't go into reactivity. I could see causes and conditions. Can you do that with family members at the holidays? Notice, maybe that's too advanced practice, sorry. Do something easier. Okay, but we can, we can look at maybe chronic situations where we become reactive. Can you look at those in terms of causes and conditions, both for you, maybe for another person, for the situation, and so forth? I've thought of equanimity in terms of understanding and wisdom and been inspired by, people who've looked at social change with a long view of history. I remember hearing Dr. Ariaratne from Sri Lanka, one of the main activists in Sri Lanka, who after the period of almost like a civil war in Sri Lanka, he said, we have to understand the causes and conditions. It took 400 years of colonialism and so forth to lead to the current situation. I have a 400-year plan for how things change. Can you imagine that with the current political situation? So he was acting very strongly, but he had the long view, right? That's a quality of equanimity. Because if we don't have the long view, we get all fixated on the momentary ups and downs. Can you see the value of that in the present moment, for example? Have both the long view and strong action or a good response. A fifth quality is one really of a certain faith and confidence that as one stays more with equanimity and it develops. We have a confidence, I think, in being able to deal increasingly with anything. This comes up, again, it's based on the experience of having brought equanimity to more and more of our experience. Having confidence, having faith. A further quality is joy and warmth. This is where it's very crucial that equanimity isn't distant or aloof. This is sort of the danger. Many of you know what's sometimes called the near enemy of equanimity is indifference. But the teaching that connects equanimity with the other heart qualities brings in the quality of joy, of compassion, of metta, and integrates it with the equanimity. I mentioned that last time, some of the discussion of mudita pointed to the way that when there's joy, people can sometimes find joy in really intense and difficult situations. Right? I mentioned I think I quoted Etty Hillesum from the way that she talked about joy, even when she was in an internment camp during World War II. There was joy there. And then lastly, a quality of equanimity is responsiveness. Again, the near enemy is indifference, which could be being aloof, being overly intellectual, but mature equanimity is linked with compassion and linked with being responsive. So equanimity is not disconnected from action. Really, really crucial. Again, you look to someone like Dr. King, or, I studied once the kind of spiritually grounded activists historically, and so many of them, their action is deeply connected with equanimity. We can see that for Dr. King. And so a really, really crucial dimension that equanimity is fully responsive and fully active. So then let me talk now about equanimity as a heart practice, as one of the Brahma Vihara. It really has some of the same qualities of balance and evenness and unshakability. But as a heart practice, much like metta or mudita, we direct the practice in the usual form of equanimity practice as a Brahma Vihara. We direct it at particular beings. And my equanimity is more an equanimity in terms of what happens to a particular being. And so the phrase, for example, that I use, and this would be in relationship to a particular being, a person, whatever, is no matter what I wish for, things are as they are, and I care. And so I may have just done metta, and in a moment, before we do the heart practice of equanimity, we'll do metta. I may have been just doing metta, loving kindness, wishing well for the person, and doing that for a period of time. Then I come back with equanimity, and I say, no matter what I wish for, things are as they are, and I care. When I had one period, when I was doing equanimity practice as a heart practice, I was doing the Brahma Vihara for about a month. And so I did equanimity for a week. And this was before my mom died. And one of the beings I brought equanimity towards was my mom, but she was at the time maybe late 80s. And I would do the equanimity phrase, no matter what I wish for, things are as they are, and I care. And I'd feel kind of like, right? Because I would know that most likely she didn't have that long to live. And so the was the extent to which maybe I wasn't fully equanimous with that. And then I just did that over and over again with that practice for a week, and more equanimity developed, but only by coming in contact with the pain. So let's, Bill, can we put up the on the screen share? I'll show you the phrases now. And then in a little while we'll do the practice. Yeah, let's, if we can, just focus, go down to equanimity. There you go. And let's just focus on the first two columns, the first two areas. Can if it's possible to focus in on that. Yeah. Great. Very good. So here are some phrases. No matter what I wish for, things are as they are and I care. That's the one that I use. I will care for you, but cannot keep you from suffering. And just see which of these might appeal to you. Whether I understand it or not, things are unfolding for you or for me according to a lawful nature. Or all beings meet their joys and sorrows according to a lawful nature. When we do the equanimity practice, these are all applied to a particular being. So we're not doing this in a general way, but we're applying it to this being or that being. I wish you happiness, but cannot make your choices for you. These are just phrases that I've compiled from other teachers. May my heart be at ease with the conditions of my life, or it could be of your life. I have my path, you have your path, and I care about you. And then many of us remember that with metta practice, we start where it's easiest. And we start also with equanimity practice with someone who's relatively neutral for us. Then we go to the more familiar ones that are called the benefactor or dear friend. And then we can go to the difficult person, then to self. But we'll do a few of these when we practice. So we can let go of this now, Bill, and we'll come back to this in a little while. So just a few more comments, then we'll do practice together. Again, one of the beautiful teachings is how all of these integrate with each other, the Brahmavihara, how equanimity, when it's mature, has aspects of loving kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity. It's a beautiful teaching. And so I thought I'd read one more passage from Nyanaponika Thera, and then we'll practice. Equanimity rooted in insight is the guiding and restraining power for the other three sublime states, the other three Brahmavihara. Equanimity, which means even-mindedness, gives to love or metta an uneven changing firmness and loyalty. It endows it with the great virtue of patience. Equanimity furnishes compassion with even unwavering courage and fearlessness. To the active side of compassion, equanimity is the calm and firm hand led by wisdom. In these and other ways, equanimity may be said to be the crown and culmination of the other three. It is perfect, unshakable balance of mind rooted in insight, but it is not dull, heartless, and frigid. Its perfection is not due to an emotional emptiness, but to a fullness of understanding. Okay, so we'll go in a moment into our practice, but let's take should we take a 1 minute break just to stretch, and then we'll go right into meditation. So we'll do what you need to do, if you need to stand up. This isn't a really a break, but it's just a minute or so. You can stand up, do what you need to do to be ready for about 25 minutes of meditation. Okay, so let's start out just with our basic mindfulness practice. Just to arrive, be present, let the talk settle. Let's take about 5 or 6 minutes, and then I'll come back with some fairly light guidance connecting our practice with equanimity. For now, let's just come to being settled. You can be with the breath or whatever helps you to settle, be present. about 5 minutes here with settling. And as we continue to sit quietly, some more specific guidance on developing equanimity in our mindfulness practice, in our insight practice. It's a natural development of mindfulness practice, particularly when we're mindful of reactivity, of when we get caught or lost and stay with it. And also as we develop more concentration or stability. Equanimity is a fruit of both of those developments. We could also specifically look out for when we have reactivity. We could work with the teaching of the eight worldly winds, which is, can be also be a powerful practice to do in the flow of daily life, and look out maybe for one or two of them in a given sitting. For example, look out for any instances of pleasure and pain where it's at a moderate or greater level and see how we work with that. The other so-called worldly winds are gain and loss, which we especially experience in terms of our thinking. Praise and blame, similarly, more in terms of memories, thinking, and so forth. And then, again, in a similar way, fame and disrepute, or good reputation, bad reputation. So we might just set the intention now, and we'll stay with this for a short time, like another 7 or 8 minutes. Just notice or set the intention to notice moments of reactivity. You might especially look out for strong, moderately, or stronger experiences of pleasant and unpleasant, and see if you can just stay balanced with it. We're not trying to get rid of any of those, but just staying balanced with whatever happens. That's the quality of equanimity. So let's stay with that for the next 7 or 8 minutes. Remembering that equanimity is about being with the flow of experience with non-reactivity, with evenness, no matter what happens. It's not about this, it's not the same, and it's not about simply being calm. Those are different. Equanimity doesn't need to be calm, but there is being with the flow without reactivity. Without shooting the second arrow, as it were. Just being present and even with whatever comes up, the quality of equanimity. Now we'll move to equanimity as a practice to develop the awakened heart. As one of the Brahmavihara, the divine abodes. We'll start by practicing loving kindness. Where it flows the easiest for you, or if there's some other heart practice like compassion or forgiveness, which works well for you, we'll warm up with that just about 3 minutes or so. So shift to loving kindness practice where it flows the best for you. Can use the phrases with a being where it flows well. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be as healthy as possible. May you be held by love. Using your own phrases or something like those. Warming up through metta. We'll continue to do metta. And Bill, let's put up the equanimity phrases again. You'll be up in a moment. Continue to practice metta for the next minute or so. Bill, can you put the phrases up like we had before? Is there a problem? There we go. Thank you. And see which of these phrases now calls you. If you're not sure, feel free just to do the one that I use, the first one. No matter what I wish for, things are as they are. The implication is for you, and I care. And we'll start first with a being. Towards whom you feel relatively neutral, maybe a neighbor or someone you meet at times in your daily life or at work, a post person, store person. Bring that being to mind. You may have an image of that person. And then you say just these phrases. No matter what I wish for you, things are as they are. We may not even know very much how things are for the person, and I care. Some people find it helpful to have the hand on the heart. No matter how I might wish things to be otherwise, things are as they are for you, and I care. Now we can move to a second being, typically using the same phrases. This can be in the language of the practice, the benefactor or dear friend, someone we're close to, someone towards whom we have a basically very positive relationship, not a complicated relationship. And typically use the same phrase. We can have a sense of the person, maybe an image. And we say, no matter what I wish for you, things are as they are, and I care. We say that, and maybe we leave 15, 20 seconds just to see what comes up, or a minute. And then we say the phrase again. No matter what I wish for you, things are as they are. And I care. Sometimes when we do the practice, our mind goes right to something we would like to see be different. And that's okay. It often is like that, but we just notice that and are with the process. Let's go now to a further being who's close to us. If you're familiar with metta, we could talk about the benefactor, usually a teacher or mentor, elderly relative, and a dear friend, more of a peer, but just find someone who you feel close to, basically positive connection, not complicated relationship, and continue using the same phrase with this further person. We can say the phrase and again, leave a little pause after we say them and just notice what's there for you and then continue. Now we'll move to bringing the equanimity practice to ourselves, typically using the same phrases we've been using, same method. You can have an image of yourself, say the phrases, give a little bit of a pause just to notice what comes up. Just continuing with equanimity practice in relation to yourself. No matter what I wish for myself. Things are as they are, and I care. We can let go of the screen share, Bill. And we have some time now for discussion. So let me invite people just to stay present with yourself for a little while, 30 seconds or a minute, and see what may have come up, what you'd like to share or ask about in terms of equanimity, both as or either as a insight practice or as a awakened heart practice. So take about a minute or so to reflect what resonated. Let's go to Vita and then Mary, please.
Thank you, Donald. Thank you for the talk. It's particularly timely for me, actually.
Yeah.
So I have a question. So I have a situation with my granddaughter, and I spoke to her yesterday, and I realized when I was through, there's not the anger, there's not, but there's a sadness.
Yeah.
So, may I accept things just as they are, and I care felt quite appropriate for me today.
Yeah.
Still a sadness. Does that, how does that fit with the equanimity? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. An important question. It's really whether the sadness leads to some form of reactivity. If this, the sadness being there could be hand in hand with equanimous. I'm sad, but I'm also balanced about what's come up, right? But if it leads to, oh, this will always be like this, there's some reactivity there. If there's commentary like that, that would be moving away from equanimity. But simply the sadness at the way things are could be hand in hand with equanimity. Yeah, thank you. So it's important. The equanimity doesn't mean, again, doesn't mean calm, doesn't mean absence of emotion, doesn't mean even absence of anger. But it's really, does it, do any of those turn into reactivity, shooting the second arrow and so forth? Mary, and then Patty, and then Liz.
What I noticed, Donald, is that that the one for the difficult person is the most reparative. It's the
Yeah.
one that, and I feel the most shift.
Yeah.
I mean, I fortunately don't have a lot of people in my life, the other figures with who are suffering particularly.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of blessed with that. But there are some difficult people in the world that doing this practice for makes me kind of go, oh, well, there's hope for them or something.
Yeah.
Anyway,
So
thank you.
that there's hope for them.
Yeah, I mean that, at least in my heart for
Yeah.
them, there's some hope for.
There's still care, they're still wishing well.
Yeah, that I can wish well for some people that are very destructive.
Right. And we, of course, we often are not equanimous with such people, so it's where the practice is. And we can be responsive with them. Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Mary. Patty, please.
Thank you, Donald. I usually think of myself as fairly equanimous, but I've been dealing with physical pain lately, and I realize that of the eight worldly winds, the physical pain can throw me off balance more than anything else.
Yeah.
And the phrases were helpful. And yet, and yet, and yet, I find myself reacting not in the sense that I think I'm doing any harm. I don't know if it's a second arrow or not, but I keep thinking, enough already, enough already.
Yeah.
So the phrases were helpful. May I be at ease with what's happening? And I thank you for that reminder that I can try to practice being more at ease with what's happening.
Yeah, can you? Because presumably you're being responsive to ease the pain as much as possible. So you're doing everything you can, right?
Yes.
And that's really crucial because equanimity does go hand in hand with caring, responsive action, as which you're doing. And then it's a question of I've done what I can, and this is the way things are, and the pain still feels like it's maybe at times beyond what I can handle easily or beyond what I can have equanimity towards. So I think it could be a matter of a few things that occur to me. Can I stretch some and be more, can I be just a little more balanced with the pain? What would that mean? Yeah, not so easy, right?
Thank you. It's not, but I'm up for the challenge.
Just stretch it a little bit. Well, the other thing would be maybe just acknowledging, maybe even through a phrase, may I be equanimous with the limits of my ability to be skillful with pain. Could almost like make a special phrase for the pain.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, those are things that occurred to me. Yeah, thank you. Liz, please.
Yes, this is a complex and beautiful practice. I just want to say, when I think about Martin Luther King,
Yeah.
he believed in God. I believe very strongly. So that would
Yeah.
have had really influenced his lack of fear,
Yeah.
which I certainly don't have. And also, this is in a way kind of funny, but not. I remember 20 years ago on retreat, I had
Yeah.
an argument with Kamala Masters because she talked about karma and said, "You are the heir or the owner of your karma. Your happiness and unhappiness depend on your actions."
Yeah.
I'm so happy, and didn't add. And I said, "I want to add, and I will help you if I can."
Yeah.
And that wasn't used then at that time. And I'm so glad to see this. And I care about you.
Yeah.
Makes such a difference.
Yeah, the there's so much misunderstanding about karma. Many of us would be happy if the concept was left in the Pacific Ocean as Buddhism came to the West. The deepest meaning is simply habit. And there's a place that probably the primary definition of karma in the text is karma is actually, that's not quite right what I said. He said karma is intention, meaning that every intention keeps a certain process going, but it's often used to mean something like, I think unskillfully, what's happening to you is because of your past actions, which is not a correct understanding. There's actually a passage where the Buddha says that's not correct. You may be experiencing pain in the present moment, but it's not, necessarily because of karma. And so I included those phrases because those are traditional ones, but I typically don't suggest them for people.
What don't you suggest?
Using the phrases for equanimity practice related to karma, because there's so much misunderstanding about karma.
Right.
Yeah.
But I like that. I will help you if I can, is very
Yeah,
important.
that's
It
really.
becomes it karma, the karma statement becomes a compassion statement.
Yeah, or another way of saying it is that your happiness depends on your actions. It sounds sometimes the way karma is talked about as it means your actions in the past. But if we think about that more in terms of the present, your happiness depends on how you respond and act in that sense, moment to moment, in the present moment. That's a little bit different.
And you don't have to do it all your own on your own. I will
Right,
help you if I
but
can.
be part of a community, yeah. Thanks, Liz. And we also could have some sharing from people who practiced with the mudita practice in the last week. Anyone want to report what you shared, what you learned, or a question, or about equanimity? Barbara, please.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, to the extent that I did it, because I found that there was a lot of gratitude.
Yeah.
And I found that for me, if I want to do mudita to myself, it's a gratitude practice.
That's right.
And and I also just found feeling people's joy also made me grateful because it made me happy to feel their joy. So I was surprised. Sometimes I used to think I would just envy people if I just got into their joy, but that's really has not been the case.
It's a transformative practice for anyone who's influenced a lot by the so-called negativity bias, whose mind tends to go to the negative, which probably is very uncommon for people who go to Marin Sangha.
No.
At least maybe one or two of the people. So it's a wonderful practice. And there's probably mentioned last time, there's a lot of amazing scientific research on the power of gratitude. It has so much capacity for helping with health, psychological well-being, and so forth. So it's an awesome practice. I mean, for me, just to take 15-minute walk around the neighborhood and connect with the bushes and trees and so forth, it's awesome. It just influences my consciousness in a very beautiful, simple, deep way. Yeah, thank you. Rebecca, please.
Yes, hi.
Yeah.
Can you address, I've been doing the practice a long time, so I get all these concepts. But can you address how to use these concepts or how to use whatever our focus should be with people who, chronically hurt others,
Yeah.
repeatedly, people who are hurtful, who live their lives hurting others? What
Yeah.
should be our focus towards these types of individuals?
Yeah, maybe in terms of equanimity, especially. Yeah.
Well, we want to try to help them not do it. I mean,
Oh, yeah,
that,
people who are.
equanimity is nice, but
Okay.
when let's say people that are hurting are people that are hurting children, I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
what should be our focus to try to transform that?
Yeah, it's going to totally depend on the nature of the relationship, right? Yeah,
Well,
and
just when you're not even with them, you're just wishing them whatever you're wishing them.
yeah, I mean, are you talking about people that you have
Inmates,
a
criminals,
relationship to?
offenders,
But are you talking about people you have a relationship to, or people who?
No, not necessarily, but
Okay.
just,
Okay.
no, not necessarily. People you have a relationship to, you can talk to,
Right.
but just people in the world who
Okay.
hurt others, what's the what should
Yeah.
we send them? Yeah.
Yeah, I would say the equanimity practice can be really helpful. There, it'd be very helpful to look into one of the dimensions I talked about. Look into the causes and conditions for why they are as they are. In other words, the dimension of equanimity related to understanding. We know, the phrase goes, hurt people, right?
Exactly, right.
Right. And so really tuning into that could be a really a balance with wishing them well, and also very significant for anyone who's causing harm in our own life that we have more of a relationship to. But I think that would be a really significant part of it, is just even maybe imaginatively, you may not know the details, but knowing that they must have been hurt.
Must have been hurt.
With others, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. That's very important. Thank you very much.
Thank you.